Integrity in management goes beyond doing the right thing, even when no one is watching. Those are the words of CPA Misty Keir, who will explain more on that topic on the Journal of Accountancy podcast. I'm Neil Amato, a senior editor with the J of A, and in this episode, Misty talks about the lessons she's learned and put into practice regarding open communication, flexible schedules, and more. Here's our conversation. Misty, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
What does leading with integrity mean to you?
What it means to me is being a leader that's offering guidance and leading their teams that is consistent with the values of the organization or with the department. So it's leading in such a way that you're doing the same things that you're coaching to your teams, and is also staying consistent. As an example, if we say that the core value of our organization is work-life balance, but we're calling our team members every time they take a day off, or we're having them work throughout their vacation, it's not consistent with the value that we're saying is important to us. So integrity is walking the walk and actually doing the same things that you expect of your team members.
So you touched on that, saying work-life balance is important and then doing other things. Why do you think it's common that managers might struggle with saying one behavior is important and then expecting or modeling some other behavior?
Ultimately, I think it's the pressures from their management and their leaders. If there is a fire that occurs, or if there is a deliverable that corporate needs yesterday, of course, they tend to want to do everything in their power to make that deliverable happen. And sometimes that might mean reaching out to that team member while they're on vacation. Sometimes it might mean having their teammate work overtime to make that happen. So ultimately, leaders are intrinsically driven. They deliver, they're successful because they're going to do whatever it takes to make it happen. And sometimes they just forget, or they don't take a second to just step back and say, okay, this deliverable has to happen right now. Can it wait until in the morning? Is this more important than our core value of the work-life balance example that I offered? So I think it's just that embedded urge to succeed and to deliver and to be successful.
So about struggling with saying a behavior is important, but then modeling another one, what kinds of confusion can this cause?
Well, I can think of another example where an organization might say that it's innovation's important. They want creative thinkers. They want people to bring new ideas and fresh ideas to the table that'll offer improved processes, cost savings, those types of things. But if someone brings an idea to the table and they get a lot of criticism, maybe even mockery, maybe just being passed over, just dismissed, they're not inclined to bring those ideas to the table. So a lot of times, leadership they're so busy and they're trying to get through the day. They're trying to get their heads above water. Sometimes they're not as conscious about their responses to a particular situation. So I don't necessarily think that leaders are conscientiously overstepping their values or having behaviors that aren't consistent with the values of the organization. I think sometimes they get so wrapped up in their environment, they just forget to be conscientious about living those values. And if you don't do it enough, it doesn't become intrinsic. You have to think about it and be intentional. So I think that's really what it boils down to.
So now might be a good time to talk about your management, not background, but maybe kind of how you've learned and grown as a manager over the years.
Lots of mistakes, honestly. I think there's a quote that I've heard once that failure is the best teacher. Because if you're doing things right all the time, if I give you a process and you execute on that process 100% of the time, your AP, you're putting in invoices, you never make an error, you're not going to understand the inner workings of the system. So when there is an error that occurs, you're having to probe, well, how did this error happen? What's driving it? What didn't the system do that it normally handles automatically? And that process, that thought process of working through a failure or working through the error is your deep dive. what did I do wrong? How could I have responded differently? A lot of times you will seek out insights, which I've done. I've been fortunate to have mentors throughout my career that I could, first of all, they're willing to give me that cold, hard truth. And they're willing to give me that criticism and sit me down and tell me, you didn't respond to this correctly. Let's talk through how you could have done it differently. Let's talk about your perspective. Let's talk about the reality. There's a book called Reality-Based Leadership that talks about telling your story, telling yourself stories. It's by Cy Wakeman. And she talks in the book about how if you're walking down the hall and you tell someone hello and they don't respond, immediately you start telling yourself a story. That person hates me. They're a jerk, whatever it is. And it could just be that that person is so involved in whatever's happening in their day that they didn't hear you. Maybe they're literally hard of hearing, which has happened to me before. But ultimately, it comes down to just learning from your mistakes and really taking that deep dive and look and taking a step back from the situation. I'm constantly trying to learn. So whenever I give performance evaluations to my team, I always ask the question in return. So we talked about your performance over the past year. We talked about how I'd like to see you move forward and how I'd like to see you grow and develop over the next year. What do you need more from me as a boss? What do you need less of? Because sometimes I can be a little hands-on and maybe I shouldn't be. I'm not giving them that autonomy that they need. So I try to make it a two-way conversation. And then I've given them some carte blanche where they can give me that feedback without repercussions. So we have a general rule in my department. If you're respectful, if you're not inappropriate or unprofessional, I'm open to any feedback you have to offer. So I try to live up to that, and they are comfortable enough with me to say, I'm giving you feedback. This is my perspective. I need you to listen. And so it gives me a chance to kind of step back, hear them out, try to understand instead of filling in the blanks for them, hearing them and letting them fill in the blanks for me. And every time I have that dialogue, I learn more and I grow and grow and grow. I still have a lot of growing to do, but that's my road to get there, hopefully.
Well, I have two follow-ups that come from that last answer. One is on that open dialogue. I'll come back to that.
Sure.
The first is on how does your accountant brain kind of deal with, when you first become a manager, making so many mistakes?
Oh, wow. That's a really good question, because most accountants, for me, for sure, I got into this because when I balance, my trial balance is zero, I know that I succeeded. Like, I know that I did it right. So it can be a little hard whenever you go to conferences, you go to trainings, and they give you this perfect formula and you follow the formula. But I think part of it is knowing, or just having that self-realization that Dr. Urich talks about, just knowing dealing with people is not really my strong suit. That's not where I excel. I'm not extroverted. So recognizing that about myself and trying to keep that in check and being conscientious about making sure that I'm being open to that feedback. But I think it's humbling, because we talked before, if you don't fail, a lot of times you miss out on some really great learning opportunities. So I have to make sure that whenever I'm getting that feedback, that I'm open to, okay, this is a learning opportunity. This isn't personal. This is a chance for me to grow and be a better boss, which will make my team members more productive and happier, and it'll help with retention and just the whole package. So sometimes you just have to put your pride on the shelf and realize that you are going to have to hear that feedback to improve. But there's that saying, birds of a feather flock together. And I tend to want to flock with the birds that are smarter and more successful than me, because I learn from them. If I'm on a level with people that are on, that aren't really progressing and that really aren't doing a whole lot, I'm not learning as much. So sometimes it takes humility to be in a room full of people that you're definitely not able to have a very intelligent conversation with sometimes, but you learn, you absorb, and you grow so much just from being humble, really.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So the part you said too about open dialogue and kind of establishing with your direct reports that they can tell you about how you're doing. I feel like a lot of employees, and not that I've been around a lot of people, but just, you know, experience, some people are scared to give their boss constructive or any sort of feedback.
I actually heard an example that Sheryl Sandberg gave about that very thing, but it's one of those things where if you're managing with integrity, you're walking the walk. So when I tell my team, I absolutely want this to be an open door policy. I want to hear what you're thinking, what your concerns are, what you're happy about, what you're not happy about. And for a while, they wouldn't. You know, you would just see the eye roll, or you would see the head tilt, or something, and I would have to call them out. So John, Jane, whoever it is, what are you thinking right now? Do you have a suggestion on this process, or do you think we should do it differently? What are you thinking? And so they'll offer their thoughts, and I make every conscientious effort not to criticize. We have an open dialogue about it. And then ultimately, they realized that I was very serious. As long as we're professional, we're not disrespectful, I want that dialogue. So for a while, it was probing them. It's like paying attention to the body language and the social cues to probe a little further. So, you know, Jacob, I know that you have something to say about this. Let's talk about it. What are you thinking? And I think weeks, months went by, and they started realizing, oh, Misty's not going to be upset if I tell her that this is the craziest thing I've ever heard. And a lot of times it was a miscommunication. So if I communicated something to the team that they weren't grasping, or maybe there's a piece of the puzzle that I didn't realize that they didn't know, usually we can fill in those blanks, or they might have a concern that I didn't even consider. So that dialogue becomes very productive. And whenever they see the results from that, they're more inclined to give it, to have it more frequently, especially when they see that I'm managing with integrity and holding up my end of the bargain.
Let's talk some about expectation setting. Are there things, you've already addressed some of them, but are there other things that you feel have helped you in your work or in your relationship with the manager or with your direct reports because they knew or you knew up front what was expected of you?
Absolutely. I think the first thing is transparency. So, I try to be very direct, gently direct with my direct reports and letting them know this is an error. This is something I'm not happy about. Maybe I wasn't clear, but this is the expectation going forward type of conversation. Some of it is just about coaching. So whenever I get a work product, going back to them and saying, okay, these are the errors that I see. This is what we should be doing differently. Going forward, the expectation is that we're being more proactive, we're reconciling, you know, X accounts, we're taking these additional steps. What can we do to partner up to make sure that you're successful in this initiative going forward? So it's the expectation. The expectations are kind of inferred, but directly given, I guess, in that I'm telling you I'm going to give you every resource that I can for you to be successful. The expectation is that you hold up your end of the bargain and deliver what I need from you. So I think whenever I'm telling them I need this, we're going to do whatever we have to do to get you here, then they have this what's the word for it? Like they have this I guess internal conviction. It's like, she's investing in me. She expects me that, and they give their own pressure to get there. But I think it's that it's keeping my eye on the goal instead of on the person. So my goal is that we have this project delivered in this timing with these key results met. My eye is not on, do I like this person, or is there a work style conflict or any of that. It's taking the personal out of it and just keeping my eye on the goal and the objective. And ultimately, that person will develop and they'll grow, and then they'll perform as the next level, and then they promote and they perform in the next level. So ultimately, the goal is just to keep developing them, and that those expectations are delivered in that constant feedback.
So somewhat related to expectation setting is also, I guess, modeling the behaviors. We talked about work-life balance and saying one thing and doing another, but how have you managed to set expectations for the people around you, the teams that you manage?
So one of the things that I try to be very conscientious about, which I know is becoming a recurring theme, but you do have to be intentional about how you manage a lot of times. And one of the things that I try to make sure that I'm doing is giving direct guidance. So what exactly do I need from them? When do I need it from them? And in what form do I need it from them? And so it's clear. What that enables that employee to do is to manage their time. So if they know that they have to leave a half an hour early, but they're going to have a half an hour that evening to make up for it, they have a little bit more comfort about taking that half hour instead of being panicked that they're not going to meet my expectation. So one of the things that I try to reinforce in that department, in my department currently, is that if I'm getting what I need from them, when I need it and how I need it, they're not going to hear a complaint from me. I won't know, honestly. I'm not particularly a clock watcher, unless they give me a reason to be. So that tends to make them more inclined to deliver on time, because they don't want me micromanaging them. They don't want me in their autonomous workspace. So I tend to try to coach them. So if they're telling me that your expectations are unrealistic, there's no way I can get that to you in time, we talk through that. So why can't you? Is there a system limitation? Do you not have the right tools? Are you not familiar with the reporting that you can pull to get that out? What's holding you up from making this? And that often opens the doors for a really good coaching experience. And then I'm able to develop them a little more, able to help them understand our ERP a little bit better. But it's also just reinforcing that, first of all, the open dialogue is welcome and open. And secondly, that I want what I need to be able to deliver to our executives, to the corporate, to those things. But I don't necessarily have to do it in my own framework. It can be done in their framework. And that gives them a little bit more, I guess, leniency or a flexibility to be able to work within their own work style, as long as it's within my expectations. But expectations goes two ways. So when they come back to me and they say your expectations are unrealistic, then I'm understanding that they have an expectation to get certain information from me that maybe I'm not delivering. Maybe I'm not delivering it effectively. Maybe I'm not as aware as I should be about what obligations they have on their desk. So the expectations are dual. So whenever I tell them, yes, I want open dialogue, I have to be receptive to it. I have to hear it and I have to act on it. Otherwise, the dialogue is just, they're just words. So it's important to be able to put that into action.
So Misty, how about rewards? How can they be incorporated into giving positive feedback?
It's interesting that you asked that, because I think a lot of times when people think of rewards, they think of compensation. They think of bonuses. They think of stock. For my team, a lot of times their reward is that they get visibility or they get to run their own meeting. They get to have their name on a white paper. Sometimes that reward is just giving them the recognition and giving them a little bit more of a boost in just their place. So we've talked actually a lot at the CFO conference about the needs of an employee. And one of them is just that they want to be able to feel purposeful. So whenever you are able to show an employee that they're adding something of value and that they're giving you a piece of information that you're going to be able to do something really, really awesome with, then they feel rewarded personally. They feel important. They feel valuable. They feel like they're a key part of the team that you need to have there. So a lot of times, whenever I'm getting, they're meeting the expectations, I'm getting the deliverables out of them that I need, when I need them, how I need them. They're getting harder projects. They're getting challenged more. They're getting to be the project managers on some initiatives. They're getting to run their own meetings. And I'll ask them, what do you want from me? Do you want me to help you facilitate it? Do you want me to just sit in the background in case there's a question you can't answer? How can I help you be successful in this next initiative? And they feel empowered, because at this point, I get to boss my boss around. That's really cool. And I think for them, a lot of times that's really rewarding. They go home excited that they got to do something that got attention. They got visibility. They made their mark. But we do have monetary rewards. You know, we have the applause points or the little VIP cards, which are different levels of gift cards. But we try to make it pretty public. And I try to do it in a way that might not embarrass someone that doesn't like public attention. I try to do it in a way that this event occurred. We had an accountant that was extra proactive. They asked questions that was outside of the realm of their duties, and we discovered that we had XYZ opportunities. And because of her, we were able to surpass these errors or these problems or issues and challenges. So this is a really great learning experience. If we're proactive, if we're being great business partners, then we can help mitigate some serious challenges. And because they did that, we're offering a token of our appreciation. But I try to do it in a way that highlights the accomplishment instead of embarrassing the employee, because that is also a learning opportunity for the rest of the team. It's like, not only can I be purposeful, I could possibly get this little gift card, but the rest of the team gets to know. It gives me a chance to teach the rest of the team about what I was able to do and how I did it. So it kind of helps bond the team a little bit more, and they become more connected, because we're a fairly small team, but for the most part, within our own department, we have trouble understanding what the other ones do because we're in our silos. So it kind of breaks down those silos as well. So sometimes the rewards is just, sometimes it's internal, sometimes it's external, and sometimes it's just helping them get validated with the rest of their team members, and giving them that visibility with the CEO, the plant manager, whoever it might be.
Is it any different managing workers who are not in your office, like managing with integrity when they are remote?
It is a lot more difficult. I've had positions in the past where I've been with a much larger organization and half of my team was remote. So we are spread out across four different states, and it is very difficult because you can't show them. They can't see your face a lot of times. They don't know what your body language is. They don't know. It's harder to get to know that person so that they understand the tone of your emails a little better. So it takes a lot more effort. And I try to do that with video calls, so that we're seeing each other. I try to get connected with them. If they're a veteran, I try to make sure I'm recognizing them on Veterans Day. I try to know their birthdays. I just try to be as involved with them as I can to try to connect with them on a personal level. But it is a lot more difficult. But some of the principles still remain. So if we're saying work-life balance is a problem and I'm calling them at 5:05 to ask them where they are, why aren't they logged in the computer, I'm not living up to the principle that I've set forth. So it's respecting that autonomy. It's still building up expectations that, you know, I don't necessarily expect you to be online at 5:00, but we do have these deadlines. And again, as long as I'm sticking to the objectives, sticking to the actual responsibilities instead of coming across like I'm micromanaging them, it generally helps. But the communication's harder because a lot of it is face-to-face. It's more effective when it's face-to-face, obviously. So it's trips. You know, you go to visit their field camps and you go to visit their states. But even that delivery can be a little sensitive because you don't want to visit them in a way that is saying, I'm following up on you. You want to visit in a way that's saying, look, we have this initiative. I just want to get to know you while I'm here, but I'm actually here for a completely separate reason that I would like you to be involved with, that I would like you to be aware of, that I would like you to spearhead going forward. So communicating that and visiting with them in a way that doesn't diminish their position can be very challenging.
Managing with integrity. That's Misty Gear. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.